dancing in the apocalypse.
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Maximum Film. It's episode 218, and it's your boy, Iffy Wadi Way, in the booth with my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we got the Christmas Zaddy himself, author of I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
Well, Iffy, people think that I'm obsessed with Christmas, and they're not wrong, but... one of the best things about, for me, about Christmas is the anticipation of Christmas. It's about the fact that it's a thing that's about to happen, which is very exciting. So this week is a great week for me because it's the week that SiriusXM launches their like 17 holiday stations. It's the week that Starbucks starts serving their Christmas beverages. And it's about the time that like a lot of people on my Facebook feed start going, it's too early. So it's just a really delicious combination of things.
You can't have one without the other.
Speaking of delicious, if you have not seen Iffy's tweet promoting my book, I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies, go back and dig that one up. It's a keeper.
I am thrilled. Normally when Iffy posts suggestive content and I turn bright red and I'm like, oh no, oh my goodness, young man, oh no. And then all I can ever reply to him is Iffy. And the best is if you look through the comments, 30% of them were just Iffy. And the rest, because it's Iffy posing naked wearing nothing but Alonzo's book. And a Santa hat. And the rest of them were people asking where they could buy the book, but Iffy's copy. So exactly. It was solid marketing execution, top to bottom.
I never know what to make of the Iffy tweets half the time, but he was using his powers for good, so I was all for it.
It was impressive. Yeah. I'm still blushing. Yeah.
It was really exciting to see people who just would retweet it with their purchase, and I'm like, they see, and then
that
I
was cool.
And no one can be mad at me because I'm helping my friend sell his book.
And you also still did it in October.
Yeah.
The other third were like, dude, yeah, Christmas
too early. So speaking of what Alonzo just mentioned,
that to Alonzo's was, point. Yeah.
Exactly. They're out there. I feel for you guys, but sorry, it's right on time for me.
Oh, well, that other wonderful voice you hear is none other than the Queen of the Midwest herself. Excommunicado. What do you always say when I do it?
In exile.
In exile.
Excommunicado. Yes.
Yeah, you know, that's the John Wick Maximum Film totally. Crossover where we're all assassins. Drea Clark, what's good?
What's good, obviously, also your promotion of Alonzo's book, a tie-in of two of my favorite people. But speaking of the Midwest, I had a very Midwest experience this weekend in the best way. I do not know what took me so long, but I finally got my ass to a drive-in movie theater.
Ooh.
And it was so fun. We went to see Halloween Kills for Halloween weekend, and obviously... during the panty, drive-ins have been a boon to many of us who are still like, no, 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 thank you, theater. But this was particularly fun because it had a sort of holiday feeling to it. And it was great. I'm going to go to the drive-in so often. But I definitely remember going all the time when I was growing up. Like I remember sitting on the roof of our Volvo watching Superman with my brother. Like I love a drive-in. It's a little time travel. Locale.
They're great. And we are blessed in Southern California to have a lot of really terrific ones, including my personal favorite, the Mission Tiki, but there are lots of good ones.
Yeah. I went to the Paramount Drive-In.
Oh, nice.
In Rosecrans, which was lovely.
Next to Guildenstern.
Yeah. Alonzo, I love you forever. They're both dead. But yes,
thank you.
It was right next to Rosecrans is right next to Guildenstern, Southern California Staples. Yeah. But the drive-in is what's good for me. Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Iffy, what's good?
Oh, well, what's good with me is, yes, I was able to ball up a thirst trap in a, you know, a favor for a friend. So no one could fault me for it. The other good with me, which ties in directly, is eggnog is officially on the shelves. And I definitely have some in the fridge right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, might I recommend, if you're still on the fence, drinking a nice glass of eggnog while reading, I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies, right here. I don't know why I held it up. No one can see, but you know.
He's holding the book for me, Alonzo, and Casey, and we appreciate it.
So truly feel that. Now, are we talking straight up eggnog, or are you are you oat milking it? What are we talking
about? Same follow up.
Mm-hmm. I shouldn't. But I'm going straight up first, you know, and I'm going straight up to I forget the name of the milk brand, but it starts with a B, out here at least, with the cow on it.
Breyers? No.
Borden? No, Borden. Yeah, Borden. Because that's that thick, good stuff. They are doing whatever they can to their cows to make sure they're producing the most delicious of sweet milks, because it's that they're, I think, out of all of them are great. But then I will slowly think of my bowels and go towards the oat milks and such, so I'm not destroying.
Wait, do you buy pre-made eggnog, or are you making? I've never had eggnog, fun fact.
Wait, really?
I know it because the word, it sounds disgusting. Eggnog, gross. I didn't have it
until I was an adult because I didn't trust it, but oh man, one taste and I was a convert.
I mean, I look like someone who was bathed in eggnog, like, so it is shocking.
I'll tell you.
But do you make it?
My grandma had a recipe that she would make, and she would make some every New Year's Eve. We have said recipe. It was thought to be lost. It was very scary. Whew. But then we do make it. But that's like my family in Louisiana, and that's on New Year's Eve. But normally I just buy it. But when it's made, it's a treat too.
Coincidentally, there's also an eggnog recipe in I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies.
Oh, come on.
But it is a bit of an arduous task because it involves heating eggs to the point where they are safe to consume, but not so much that they become scrambled, you know? So it's like, it's very much, much easier to just buy it off the shelf at your local grocery store and then, you know, add your own booze.
All right.
Ooh, yeah.
I'll let you guys know if I ever take the dip into nog.
I'll tell you, if you want to, like, you know, test the water out, make eggnog French toast.
Ooh.
Okay.
It's already got egg and dairy in it, so you don't have to add anything else. Just dunk it right in and French toast it up.
I'll think on it. I'll think on that.
You want to pray on that?
All right. Well, today we're discussing Dune. Yes, this came out 2 weeks ago, but it's not queer enough or scary enough to fit our queer horror month in October, so we're doing it now. Plus, we'll hear from Christmas Zaddy in the Christmas Zaddy Christmas Movie Minute, our favorite time of year, and of course, we'll have staff picks. But first, it's time for our news segment, Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a news segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? And first up, we have the Cube. I said it in a fun way, but it's not fun news. Actor and rapper Ice Cube is leaving the film Oh Hell No because he has declined to get the COVID-19 vaccine at the producer's request. Ice Cube would have starred alongside Jack Black and is losing out on $9 million by stepping away from the film. The movie was set to shoot in Hawaii later this winter, and Sony is apparently looking for a replacement. Is this important? Do you care?
How grateful am I for the title of this film being Oh Hell No?
I mean, you couldn't have written right a better there, situation.
Yeah, right? Pretty much. Like, the headline writers everywhere rejoice.
Truly, just everybody, just take a nap today. It's right, it's all done for you. This is important to me, because we are at, this is where our turning point is, right? Like, we are at a point with vaccine and vaccine proximity, and we are at a point with mandates in workplaces, of needing to, like, as we move forward into our new, not even post-COVID, it's going to be there forever, our, like, COVID world, there is something about this that I appreciate the producers being like, yeah, you had to do this one thing and you're not, and we're not going to work around it. So bye, and we'll find someone else to replace you. I am eternally annoyed that someone with easy access to both vaccines and vaccine safety knowledge, as a wealthy man like Mr. Ice Cube is, would make that kind of decision. But in a strange way, I find it heartening of like, yeah, these are the things we have in place because we know what's best for the health and safety of our crews who are in like very close environments, and we're all sticking to it.
Yeah, the upside is the bye-bye aspect of this, but the downside is just it is so depressing that this the reason that this has gone on for so long and with such horrible, like, you know, body counts, if you will. I know, wrong ice. I know.
I'm impressed anyway.
Is the fact that, you know, people are still, you know, refusing to get vaccinated. They're not like bringing us to the numbers where we could get this thing under control. And for nonsense, like there is not one reason that stands up to any kind of like scrutiny when you press people about why they're against this. And it's like, do you want polio to come back? Is that, do we have nostalgia for that as well? Like this notion suddenly that regular folks see a video on YouTube and suddenly they know more than actual scientists doing actual research is very frustrating. And you're right. Ice Cube has access to the medicine and has access to the information, and he's choosing not to partake in either. But I'm glad at least that even as somebody with as much clout as him, the studio can be like, nope, this is not what we're doing, and you're not going to be in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, like, here's the thing is, you know, very early on in them early stages, in the early points, there was this pass that, you know, we were allowing older Black people because of, you know, history. I do think at this point in this juncture, we are far enough along in the vaccine rollout to where if you wanted to do your own research and track the health of many people and see if it's safe, then you're cool. If you're citing you don't know the long-term effects, then I don't know what to tell you. But this is just part of it. If this is important to you and you want to, and this is the side that you want to be on, then sure, stay off the sets. As far as if we're cube tracking here in New, you know, as the voice for cube the Black community, you know, he's already on a downward spiral. You know, he was, you know, hanging with Trump. We didn't like that. And, you know, he's had some anti-Semitic views, you know, that wasn't a good look. So this is just another thing. I mean, throughout the pandemic, Cube has promoted wearing a mask. So I'm very curious. It really does feel like this stubborn old head thing, which is why, like, I'm, you know, I can't be the most mad, but I'm like, is this going to be the last part of this year is stubborn old Black men ruining their careers because they don't want to get with the times? Is that what time it is?
Oh, let's hope not. You know what I will say on the positive front? This week we did clear, this is sort of related to movie news in that Americans watch and are in movies, but we cleared 80% of adults in America now have had at least one shot. Hell and yeah. 70% of adults are now fully vaccinated, 190 million people, which is up from 2 million from when Biden took office. So it's not all bummer. We move forward, you guys. We move forward.
I needed some good news on this, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I'm very excited, as somebody who is a fan of slow TV, to hear about A24. They are doing something interesting with the release of their new docuseries by Australian filmmaker Warwick Thornton. The series is called The Beach, and it features, quote, Thornton, three chickens, a dog, and a mud crab, unquote, living and existing on a deserted beach. A24 will be showing the series on a continuous loop between November 22nd and 28th on its virtual platform, the A24 Screening Room, and you can watch it for $6. Is this important? Do you care?
I love this so much. Warwick Thornton's a really interesting Australian filmmaker. His first film, Samson and Delilah, was supported by the Indigenous program at Sundance. And that they programmed this and that, you know, that they're doing this unusual release again, which we talked recently about the Thai filmmaker that Alonzo can reference.
Apichatpong Virasethakun.
Indeed. That Memoria is going to have an unusual rollout. This I double love because it's showing for the 7 days that overlap Thanksgiving, and having an indigenous filmmaker, even one from another country, highlighted at such a specific time seems like a really small little nod. But if you look, just watch the trailer for this. Oh,
the trailer's hypnotic.
You will be like, yeah, I could watch 7 days of this. It really, it's this man and some animals on a deserted beach. And it's
part slow TV and part cooking show.
Yeah, and it looks just fascinating and beguiling and very, very slow. But it's that sort of thing that when you try and explain film language or what cinema or television can do in terms of story, and it's so much beyond just like, oh, I've seen Seinfeld, I know how TV works. And then you're like, well, no, please experience this sort of thing. And I really like that they're doing it this way, that it's available. The A24 screening room that you can rent on, like Alonzo said, for $6, it's something I think that they, you can get it through your Roku, through your Apple TV, or watch it on a browser. Like, there's a lot of ways to watch it digitally.
And again, if anyone from Pluto TV's slow TV channel is listening, please, please give us something besides trains going through Norway. I think I've seen all of them at this point. Diversify, give me a boat on a canal, give me knitting, anything. Just enough with the trains going through Norway.
We've seen the trains. I love an activation. I love an activation. I love a, and I am team this. I will say I misread this and thought it was the Leonardo DiCaprio beach. And I was really excited. But
I want to point out that in our script, it literally says in parentheses, not the Leonardo DiCaprio beach.
So
if they did like, extra legwork to get there.
To see, to not see not. Yeah. I saw the beach, the Leonardo DiCaprio one. And I was almost going to be like, Casey, you'd think I don't know Leonardo DiCaprio. My boy Leo Dio's the beach, you know, no way, Jose.
So for the very first time ever, a Marvel movie is officially rotten on Rotten Tomatoes. The Chloe Zhao directed Eternals is currently sitting at 53% on Rotten Tomatoes. To be certified fresh, you gotta break 60%. Zhao's previous films include The Rider and Best Picture winner Nomadland. And not surprisingly, Eternals allegedly strikes a different tone from previous Marvel movies. It's apparently more, quote, muted, religious, and contemplative. Is this important? Do you care?
I think it's important when stories like this pop up that we sort of walk people through, again, the idea of what Rotten Tomatoes measures and what the numbers mean, if anything. What 53% means that 53% of critics marked their review as fresh, or the site decided was fresh. The other 47, while they may be rotten, they aren't necessarily saying, ugh, piece of shit. I mean, I've seen some reviews out there that are some doozies, but I think a lot of the reviews are like, well, I mean, I get she's going for something different here, and there's some really gorgeous stuff, and it doesn't all work for me, but I mean, you know, and so that unfortunately is the kind of thing that gets lost in the fresh, rotten, binary that you're stuck with. Mm-hmm. And as somebody who posts reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, I have to deal with it all the time because it is this sort of, I mean, a lot of times movies leave us in that middle place where it's like, well, I mean, it was, you know, it had the, but then it also, yeah. So anyway, I'm sure that there's going to be like a big to do among the corners of the internet that don't want to have superhero movies that deal, you know, that are directed by women and featuring people of color, blah, you know. So I'm sure that's going to become the narrative for Eternals, that it was too woke or whatever the fuck people are going to say. But, you know, I it's just that number doesn't necessarily mean like it's scored a 53 with somebody or that it's only 53% good. It's just, It's more complicated.
Alonzo, it's crazy that as a critic who spends time and a considerable amount of knowledge and thought writing something and trying to engage with the nuances, you would be offended to just have that turned into a splat or a tomato.
Yeah, yes. That's red crazy. Or green is really that. I should just write red or, red green, or green and then man. Save myself the effort of the 10 yeah. paragraphs.
Well, yeah, that's the interesting thing. I feel like we always have to revisit that conversation with Rotten Tomatoes, right? Is like, because like everyone wants a, you know, a Joaquin Phoenix in the stands of the Gladiator tournament. thumbs up or thumb. So
we
that's
what
that
they're looking for. I thought we were going to do that.
That's what they're looking for. They're looking for this binary, and like Rotten Tomato was like, oh, we should do a percentage of how many good. But I think also because of that binary, it doesn't go anywhere between did you think it was good? Did you think it was bad? I think already the Eternals is such a like as a just the IP as a Marvel comic is already on the weirder side of the Marvel stuff that this is already going to be a conflicting movie. So it gets even wilder to me that there's this like, the Marvel movies are a turn. I'm like, no, this is going to be one of those things that split people. And I think it's going to be the same way like Dune is going. There's a lot like I couldn't tell how people felt about this movie looking at Twitter because it was just all over the place. And it's very interesting. And I'm going to save all that for later.
Good
but
call.
Right now, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we'll be talking about Dune. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. We get our cars tuned up to prevent bigger issues down the road, and we get annual checkups and go to the gym to maintain physical wellness and prevent injury and disease. So going to therapy is just like all that I just said. It's a routine maintenance for your mental and emotional wellness to prevent bigger issues down the road. Therapy doesn't mean something's wrong with you. It means you're investing in yourself to keep your mind healthy.
I enjoy that phrasing, even if someone smarter than us told us to use that phrasing. I think the concept of self-care is often shunted into something that's like, oh, it's very new agey or very self-indulgent. But you have to take care of yourself. You are the thing that you are driving through this universe. And I think prioritizing mental health is so important. Being able to talk about things and know that they have value and priorities and importance in your life, even if they aren't hugely traumatic things, that will be beneficial to keeping you on a good path, feeling your best, and, you know, living life in a way that makes you happy and satisfied, hopefully.
BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It can be more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in less than 48 hours. Why invest in everything else and not your mind? This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Maximum Film listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/MaxFilm. That's BetterHelp.com/MaxFilm.
Hey, kid. Your dad tell you about the time he broke Steven Dorff's nose at the Kids' Choice Awards?
In Dead Pilot Society, scripts that were developed by studios and networks but were never produced are given the table reads they deserve.
When I was a kid, I had to spend my Christmas break filming a PSA about angel dust. So yeah, being a kid sucks sometimes.
Presented by Andrew Reich and Ben Blacker. Dead Pilot Society, twice a month on MaximumFun.org.
You know, the show you like, that hobo with the scarf who lives in a magic dumpster.
Doctor Who?
Yeah!
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark.
Alonzo Duralde.
And today we're talking about Dune. Drea, would you mind providing us with a brief synopsis in a way that we'll understand in one sitting?
Yes, a brief synopsis of the motion picture Dune. Got it. All right. So this takes place in a fantasy world. and we are primarily with the House Atreides.
Atreides.
We're primarily following the House Atreides, mm-hmm. which is, you know, we have Oscar Isaac as the father. We have Rebecca Ferguson as his partner and the mother of his grown son, Iffy Wadaway's best friend, Timothée Chalamet. And they have just been, they're wealthy. They run a whole empire, and they've been just been given the rights to the planet of Arrakis by the Emperor, taking them from the Harkonnens, who are baddies who have had them for years. And Arrakis is important because that is where spice is harvested, question mark. And the Fremen live there.
Atreides.
I don't know why my name is right in there. The Atreides are a much more hoping to be a benevolent leaders, but it's all kind of a setup. So we get there. There's conflict. They have Duncan Idaho, the best name ever for like their like swaggery sort of Han Solo guy. Yes. So they want to make the best out of this, but they also know they're just being set up for war. And the stakes are very high, but not as high as the heat, because Arrakis is a hot ass desert, sandy ass place, and everything there is designed around dealing with that. So yes, Dune.
Yes.
Oh, and yeah, there's a sort of like, and also Timothée Chalamet might be some sort of chosen one, and his mother is part of this like sisterhood of witches, which I'm all for.
The Bene Gesserit.
The Bene Gesserit, big fan of these witches. And he's been the only dude trained in their witchcraft because his mom is like, oh, I'm going to make you into a god, which is, yeah, you know, fair enough.
Spoiler alert, he is the Messiah. And I only say this because, like, literally when the book opens, it goes, this is the story of Maudib, the like Messiah. You know, it's like he's that guy.
But we don't get to Maudib in this movie.
Well, that's what I thought. I was like, oh, this is probably gonna be the ending line when he mentions Maudib, but we don't hear it at
not
all.
Yet.
But they don't explicitly say that it's him. What they do start this movie with, and that we discussed even sort of ahead of time, is the title card says Dune, Part One. So they're setting up. I'm like, I guarantee they had too many screenings where it just said Dune and then it ended and people were like, why did you just show me half a story? So then they were like, oh, we got to add that Part One to the title card.
I'm so into this, and I'm going to start off by answering the question to lead into my whole general idea and discussion about this. Super producer Casey wrote, has anyone read the book? I read half. And according to this watch, exactly this half. I was so surprised at how everything I caught. And actually, I was really enjoying it, which was very interesting. And I want to say, I feel like the main reason if someone is like in their hissy fit about this movie, besides all the good reasons that some may come up with, I feel like this movie had a Green Knight effect where people knew kind of Dune. They knew it was a sci-fi movie, knew this was going to be a big sci-fi juncture, and was expecting there to be way more action than it was. If you read a lot of sci-fi books like I do, if you're a sci-fi nerd, this is par for the course. People don't expect to hear this much about economics in a huge sci-fi movie. People don't expect to hear this much about bureaucracies in a sci-fi movie, but this is honest to what that medium is. There
it's
are
like
a lot
how
of things.
Everyone's favorite part of the Star Wars franchise is all of the Senate debates.
Yeah, exactly.
The trade war. People love those.
If you rolled your eyes at the crawl at the beginning of episode one about the trade war, this is maybe not your movie.
Not your genre.
100%. The best pitch is if you were that person who like really liked the like very bureaucratic parts of Game of Thrones, you eaten. Because this is what but Game of Thrones threw like some boobs and violence in there to kind of string it along. This movie is like, no, this is, we gonna lay the groundwork.
We can't bear boobs. That suit needs all the water out of the skin.
It needs all the water.
They got to keep the titties covered. Yeah.
This feels like such a faithful attempt at this adaptation. And because it carried over one of the things that I felt was weird in this book, where there feels to be like there's some sort of sexual tension between Paul and his mother. Like you're making a look, but there is this like, there's like a little, like, I'm like, I get it. I'm a mama's boy. I love my mom. But this, there seems to be
Casey,
this given.
Casey, if they know we're recording right now,
hey, yeah, look,
this is going to be publicly released.
If he's not wrong, they literally get into each other's heads after all. I mean, you know, they're like, they have this whole psychic communication going on because of her witchiness that she has taught him to be in on. So like, yeah, you're not wrong.
Isn't he? Yeah. I guess I did appreciate, I'm neither a mother nor a son, so I guess I can't speak to how that bond works. Fair enough.
Maybe you should just keep out.
Yeah, maybe I'll just leave that to you guys who have a lot of thoughts about your mothers and how you communicate with them. That's fine. One of the things I really liked about this, and I read Dune, and I only read the first one in like high school when I was doing a lot of sci-fi reading myself. And then I saw the Lynch adaptation back in the day. And the most recent thing I watched Jodorowsky's Dune in the past like 5 years or a few times. So I've seen that more than I ever read the source material or anything. But I responded to this mother son, not in the same way as Iffy, but I actually really liked all of the elements about Lady Jessica, the mother, both her power, the idea of the communication that she sets up. I thought it was like so like beautifully threaded through that she had, they have a sign language that they do, and then they also have this like head telepathy sort of thing, but then they also have this shared, she's trying to teach him the voice, which is this like commanding. There were just so many things in that. I loved the stuff with the Bene Gesserit. I really liked the idea that Lady Jessica had sort of like worked what I was getting. And then I also appreciated what that says to the broader thing of how this adaptation functions of, oh, it was giving me a lot of space, time, and credit to be able to fill in a lot of these elements. Like Lady Jessica's whole relationship with Leto, with her partner, and that he says something about like, oh, I should have married you or something. And I'm like, I don't know if they have space marriage. Like, you don't know how each of these worlds works. But, you know, just the structures that are set up, or the idea that she went rogue and she was supposed to have a girl, and that A, she could control that, and B, her decision not to implied all these other things. And it's never on the nose. I thought there was a really nice job of giving me world building and these rich histories and stories that were not so laid out that I felt talked down to.
Here, this is my question for everybody. Did anybody see this in a theater? Did we all watch it at home?
Yeah, I watched it in my surround sound 75-inch monster TV. But I will say it was during the day, and this is a very dark movie, and we know that the tech isn't there for watching things on a TV.
Because the thing I keep encountering people is like, well, you know, you've really got to see it. If not, if not on the IMAX, at least on the big screen, because, you know, my feeling was that like it felt very monochromatic to me. But of course, but I'm being told, no, I'm missing out on the niceties and the detail and the yada da da. I had never seen the Lynch Dune, and so I watched it the day before I watched this one.
Ooh,
and I think it kind of helped, just at least so that I knew what the story was and who the people were and what the relationships
were. And how to pronounce Atreides?
Atreides, yes, for sure. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I am fine with, like I said, I love slow TV. I love contemplative. I love, you know, when director Denis Villeneuve has done stuff like, you know, Blade Runner 2049 or Arrival, like both of those films, I think, you know, take their time and they're very subtle but specific about what it is they're doing. And I like both those movies a lot. This one, I have to say, I found myself kind of tuning out at times because, I mean, maybe because I had just seen the other version, so I knew what was coming, and I thought it was just the getting there, I didn't find all that interesting. But this is a movie that at some point in the future, when such a thing is possible for me, I would see it again on the big screen to give it a shot because I want to give this movie the benefit of the doubt. I do generally like a lot of what this filmmaker does. I like these actors. You know, there's some choices here, you know, but it left me kind of cold, frankly. Like, as bizarre and baroque as the Lynch version is, I at least kind of felt like it was telling me a story in a way that was more captivating, even though they were clearly rushing through to cram twice as much story into, you know, the same pound, the same size sausage skin, you know?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ify.
Oh, I was going to say, I agree with you, but just feel differently. Like, I think you're 100% right. It's very, very monochromatic. I don't know. Nothing at a theater is going to change how monochromatic. It's grays, browns, whites, and blacks. Like those are those.
All
that's
that
the
breaks
color,
it that, up is yeah. the sexual attention between a boy and his mother. That's it.
You know, and that's, but to me, it's like this very brutalist take on sci-fi design, which I liked, because at first I was kind of on this because everyone, when they first saw the suits, they're like, everything has to be so black and this, and I kind of was feeling that. But then once we got to the orthocopter, I was like, okay, we're getting some fun design here.
That was rad.
Yeah. I was like, I'm starting to see the world that you're building and how this works. And then to me, it kind of felt, and then like the, even like the, to get really nerdy, like the way their headsets looked, like I got it. I got Denis's vision of like what this world looks like. So like I was in,
but the Lynch sweatsuits, by the way, you know, the thigh pads process the urine and feces, and they leave that out of this movie. And granted, maybe you need Max von Sydow to deliver that line, but like, come on.
Urine and feces are processed in the thigh pads.
I found this really immersive. I actually had an easier time sinking into this world than I did Blade Runner 2049, which is a movie I enjoy. Like, I also am a big fan of this director and how he approaches things. But I found this, I don't know if it's just because the time of day, like how I was watching it, I sank into it like a sand pit. I'm sure there's a beautiful metaphor there that Alonzo can hammer out for me later, but it was a much easier watch than I expected. And it was because it's been so long and you hear so much of how serpentine the story and how difficult to adapt. And I found it, oh no, this is actually, as much as I sort of bungled my way through the summary in discussion, the synopsis, I did find it a very, oh, we have a good family. We have an evil family. We have an emperor that wants to set them against each other for his own gain. We have a people who are being colonialized and taken advantage of by all of these people, regardless. And I felt it was set up so nicely. And the world building very much worked for me. And I didn't stumble on any of the thinking it was monochromatic or anything, because it did seem so organic that, like, yeah, I'm on a sand desert. Like, I don't see them putting on, like, pink paratrooper. I know that's not what you're saying either.
Yeah. Yes.
They should have decorated with neon. Well,
but also there is like something to come to that, because
where were
like,
the kites?
There are a lot of conversations about this movie and the optics of this movie and this, but I'm like, yeah, I mean, here's the thing is when we keep dipping into old source material like this, we're going to come up with old unaddressed problems. When you have Frank Herbert, who obviously was like, these brown people being colonized, and then one white person learns the brown ways.
But his whole thing, and again, whether or not he was even successful, he actually wrote it. It's not a white savior thing. Like, even as you, if, because of course then I wormholed and was wormholed.
We read the same article. Yeah.
No, I read about 1,000 and then I read the synopsis for all of the other books. But basically he's setting it up that, you know, that there's this false construct that there's a savior coming.
Yeah.
This kid, it's attributed to him. And in a lot of ways it's sort of earned, but even the kid is aware that it's a false construct and that it's bigger than him. And I do I am interested where they go in part two to kind of reconcile those things.
Well, also, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. They do kind of start even addressing it here, where he's like, people, like when he has that freak out, when he is in the spice tent, and he's like, people are going to just kill in my name and at the base of my, like, it's doing a good job of that. There has been this like light discourse of like, there's a planet of brown people. I'm like, yeah, I mean, look, this is a dude writing in the 60s, and he was trying to like tackle race using sci-fi, and he had to do it via heavy-handed measures because white people can be dumb about these things so hard.
It's about Vietnam, all right?
Did you guys have the same? I'm like, in my understanding, what's our boy's name? Our sweet little
Timothée Chalamet.
Nope, his character
Paul Atreides.
That's right. The most wild, outlandish space name. Paul. our guy Paul. I was like, as my reading is, Paul's also biracial. His father is Oscar Isaac. So like, there was, which is also really interesting casting. Oscar Isaac, a wonderfully believable, sympathetic leader, a noble man, like looking all of snack-ish. Those things. Also Latin. And so to me, there's things of, ooh, I feel like they were trying for some kind of 100% race awareness, and then maybe some was a little beyond them.
Well, no, that's where I was landing. I was like, there are certain things that need to, I kind of came in this expecting like this to be so black and white because of the quote unquote discourse, and everyone, there's just races everywhere in every facet of this. You have dark skin, light skin, black in every part in the like group that comes with the Atreides, the weird kind of shaman person who was on that planet with the people with the weird helmets. Like, it's a very diverse movie throughout. And it's, to me, it's just like, sometimes we can just digest a movie before having a take. We don't have to like exit the theater and run to Twitter.
And Iffy, is the name of that planet the people with those weird helmets, or am I pronouncing that wrong too?
No, I didn't know what was going on. They got these helmets. They chilling. Timothy doesn't want to wear his black suit. He's like, "What do we got to do?"
Yeah, that's like, when they signed over the power. They did. They were the most the Melbourne Spaceballs. They were the most Spaceballs looking helmets.
Dark helmet.
Yeah.
All rise in the presence of Dark Helmet.
It is so funny that it's like every royal child hates going to official events. I want one movie where the royal child's like, yeah, I'm hyped on this. Let's go. Every royal child is like, must we go to the
royal child that's hyped on that is the royal child that's going to end up a dictator. So be happy about the ones who are a little petulant.
Oh, well, it's time to give our final review. Lots to talk about. Thick episode, very thick. So let's start with Alonzo. What are you going to give us?
I mean, look, I have to. I'm a stream it just because I think that this movie is trying to be this sort of very, you know, artful and intense look at a story that is a pretty basic metaphor about colonialism and resource management and that kind of thing. And so it feels a touch up its own ass. But I am totally willing to acknowledge that seeing it on the big screen could be a totally different experience for me, that it would draw me into it in a way that I didn't feel watching it on HBO Max. You know, I can only watch Jacques Tati's playtime in 70mm. So I get it. I get it.
Oh my God. Speaking of up their own ass.
Yeah. It's comfy in here. But yeah, so I'm a stream it.
All right, Drea, what does it come up to?
I'm a screen it. I really enjoyed this. I enjoyed the world of it, getting lost in it, figuring it out. I'm going to watch it again because I am now dedicating my life to learning the voice myself. And you all better watch out.
Watch some Elaine Stritch videos.
That is the voice. That's the second, the backup voice. I'll be happy with either of them. Yeah.
Here's to the ladies. Lunch.
You know, I really, as someone who read the books, really love how they did the voice and how it kind of like played. It was fun. I am a screen it. This is extremely my shit, but you know, I love Timmy. T- Timmy killed it. He's great.
Timmy was great. Can we also give a shout out to Jason Momoa? Yeah. Looking, Jason. The man looks comfortable anywhere. Like,
yeah.
That is a real skill set. The amount of indie films I watch where I'm like, oh, if only one of these actors looked at least comfortable. Jason Momoa manages to make a workout joke in Dune. Like, oh, yeah. A muscle teasing joke. I was dying.
It's too good. Yeah.
He's living in his own Duncan, Idaho.
He truly. Oh my God, his own kind of Duncan, Idaho.
Yeah,
own Duncan, I knew I'd get there.
Oh yeah, and then you know Dave Bautista in there being buff as hell. Good is good. All this.
Who will be Fade Rotha? We won't know till part two.
Yeah,
is that the bad brother?
That's the Sting brother. Yes,
the Sting brother. Oh, that's right. Okay.
But yeah, I say all this love for Timmy just to mention how he recently mentioned in an interview where a director who won't be named said that gave him rules, no hard drugs and stay away from superhero movies. And Timmy, my guy, how is this Dune soon to be franchise that was screaming this is going to be a franchise about a mystical boy? How is this different than a superhero movie? And that's not a diss on you, Timothy. It's to tell your friend who the streets are definitely saying is Martin Scorsese.
if it's not a superhero movie, it's Oscar bait.
Yeah. But tell your friend to get his head out of his ass. Get that bread any way you can, okay?
Timothy, of course, please feel free to write us at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org.
Yep.
With your thoughts.
Yes, he can also call into the hotline.
He can call in the hotline. Love to hear your voice. It's been a while, but we'll be right back after a short break.
Hey, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin. Together, we're The Flophouse,
a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then talk about it.
Movies like Space Hobos, Into the Outer Reaches of the Unknown and the Things That We Don't Know, the movie, and also Who's That Grandma?
Zazzle Zippers, Breakdown 2, and Backhanded Compliment.
Elvis is a Policeman.
Baby Crocodile and the Happy Twins.
Leftover Potatoes?
Station Wagon 3.
Herbie Goes to Hell.
New episodes available every other Saturday.
Available at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bye. Bye.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde.
Drea Clark.
It's that time again where we wind Alonzo up and let him spin around the virtual studio like a beautiful Christmas top or a Hanukkah dreidel. It's the Christmas Zaddy Christmas Movie Minute. As we all know, Alonzo gets 1 minute to discuss every Christmas movie he saw this past week. Alonzo, are you ready?
Yes, let's do it.
Oh my God, I'm nervous. Can he do it?
Okay, week for Hallmark. Christmas in Harmony, lovely chemistry, but terrible writing, and they didn't even let Loretta Devine sing. What are y'all thinking? Coyote Creek Christmas, same bad writing, but also no chemistry. The lesbian B couple should have been the leads. Christmas Promise, mawkish and ridiculous, even by Hallmark standards. Winner of the weekend would be Christmas Sale, mainly because Katie Sackhoff and Terry O'Quinn play daughter and father, and they were awesome. There's a new comedy opening in theaters today called Christmas versus the Walters. Let's just say no one wins, even though there's a great comedic supporting cast that includes Chris Elliott and Caroline Aaron and Bruce Dern, who literally phones his role in, but don't bother. The winner here is The Klaus Family on Netflix. It is a Dutch-Belgian co-production with a performance by René Soutendijk from the Verhoeven film, strangely enough, about a Christmas-hating kid who discovers that he is next in line to be Santa Claus. It's actually quite charming and a really cool family movie. Apparently there's a sequel that we're not getting yet this year, but I have my fingers crossed for next year. Watch it with the original to English subtitles.
Oh my gosh, he did it!
Wow, yeah, that's a buzzer beater. Came in, you saw,
He slayed.
Oh, it's get early it? November, you guys. The weeks just get more packed from here.
My personal thing is I like to keep track of words that thrill me. This time you said mawkish, and I'm going to coast on that for days. Thank you.
Ooh, yeah, that's solid. Mawkish is good. I'm going to have to take that. I'm going to have to pull that out at a party and be like, yeah, you know, let me get some of that tea.
I find this eggnog really mawkish. Say it just like that.
It comes in handy. What can I say?
Oh, yeah. It's getting exciting. I something I said before the start of this got me very curious. Four Christmas movies.
Sorry.
Do you...
Something I said I found really thought-provoking.
Yeah, and I thought I'd expound on that for a quick second. But do you, if a Hanukkah movie comes out, do you add that to your Christmas movie haul?
Yeah, there will be. I believe we're getting a Hanukkah movie from Hallmark last year. We got one last year, two a couple years ago. So that's definitely in the mix. And there is one of the VH1 or Comedy Central films that's about another year-end holiday that I didn't know at all. I don't have it written down in front of me, but they're definitely, we're seeing there's a real explosion going on. Like there's a great blog that I follow on Tumblr called Ho Ho Holiday Viewing, where they just exhaustively keep track of what's coming up, and the numbers this year are like, she did a bar graph one day of what this year looks like compared to previous years, and it's just staggering. There's so many players getting involved. Peacock has Christmas movies this year. Discovery Plus has a Christmas movie this year. You know, like Paramount Plus and, you know, Disney Plus, of course, and like all these other places are really getting into it. BET Plus, I think, like quadrupled the number of Christmas movies they're doing this year. So like, yeah, I think we're spreading out in all directions, and, you know, you're definitely seeing more and more this attempt to be more diverse and to be about, you know, not just different ethnicities, but interracial couples and about queer families and all this kind of stuff. So it's a very exciting place. And obviously this is happening because people are watching this stuff. I mean, the companies chase this kind of thing unless it's going to be lucrative for them. So
it pays off. We're going to have to make our own soon where it's going to be if he goes to Minnesota. And there's like some woman who's been like, she's very busy. She's there a very busy career woman. She takes over the family bait shop. And and he like coaxes her out. We'll work on it, you guys.
Yeah,
I come into town, I'm a Grinch. I hate Christmas because I'm unable to podcast. I'm unable to podcast. All my guests are too busy to podcast. So I hate Christmas. Why? Because, you know, my family, blew up. On a Christmas, it was an oven accident.
You can't wear revealing shorts.
Yeah. I got so excited about Christmas dinner. I left the, the gas on and it blew up my whole family. So I hate Christmas. And
origin story.
Yeah. And so the bait shop lady is the one who teaches me to love Christmas again. We got there
for sure.
You're gonna make me write a 15-page
outline
Christmas
movie that we will read on.
No, I'm gonna write it. I'm gonna write it and then we'll read it on air. We'll have to get all our favorite guests.
I will absolutely do. I'll produce that. I'll cast that thing. We'll get some ringers in.
All right.
We will absolutely do a live reading of Iffy's, and you know, it has to be like go through the Alonzo polish, like
This is very weird. I mean, like, I was obsessed with superhero comics when I was like a teenager, and so to see the movie explosion of that now is just like bizarre for me. But to see that this thing that I didn't even really start getting into until the last 5 years, these dopey made for cable Christmas movies, like they're the currency of the land right now. And I don't know quite how that happened, but you know, I think the shit show of the last, you know, 5 years between the politics and the pandemic, You know, everybody just needs like massive doses of cozy, and that's where they're getting them.
All right. Well, you know, Alonzo, we've been talking a lot about Christmas. Do you have some sort of new book that people can read about Christmas if they were so interested?
Funny you should mention it. Why, yes. It's called I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies. I co-wrote it with the very funny hosts of the Deck the Hallmark podcast, and it's now on sale from Running Press anywhere that you get books.
Anywhere, but you need to get your own. You can't get Iffy's copy.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe it'll be a Christmas. Yeah. A Christmas.
Maybe a charity auction down the road or something.
Yeah. Oh, well.
And if your local bookstore doesn't have it, make them get you one.
Ooh, nice. Yes, indeed. Okay. Now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Drea, why don't you start?
Funny enough, I have a Christmas movie.
Ooh.
And actually, I remembered it was that because Alonzo told me the last time I mentioned this movie. It is the motion picture Spencer, starring Ms. Kristen Stewart as the late Princess Diana. It takes place all one weekend at the family, like the Sandringham estate. And it is near the end of her crumbling, problematic marriage to Prince Charles. And It's this film that from the minute it premiered, people have been talking about possible Academy accolades for her. And I was like, well, I think she's been growing. Well, she's so good in this. Like, she taps it. There's the mannerism, the posture, the voice, all of it. But it's a really, I love Pablo Larraine, the filmmaker. He also did like Jackie. He has a history of doing these films that detail about these sort of historically significant women and their interior lives. And Spencer just, it's incredible. She does this thing that really both, she's very grounded and you understand who, you get a sense of this fictional version of her as a woman, but it also has these flights of fantasy and disconnect. And it's really special. I can't wait for people to see it.
Ooh, okay. Well, coming off of that, what you got for us, Alonzo?
Well, you know, this is kind of a T-ball given our topic this week, but really, go over to HBO Max and watch David Lynch's Dune. It is nutty. And it is nutty in a very unique way in that you have this visionary auteur trying to wrestle this very complicated ambitious novel, all under the auspices of Dino De Laurentiis, who clearly just wanted another Star Wars. So you have these, you know, the all these different kind of things in the mix. Again, this is not a two-parter like Villeneuve is doing. He's trying to get it all into one baby. So you've got tons of narration from Virginia Madsen trying to walk you through everything. You've got people's innermost thoughts being like whispered on the soundtrack. This amazing cast of people from like, you know, like legends who are no longer with us, like, you know, Jose Ferrer as the Emperor, you know, and Kenneth MacMillan as Baron Harkonnen, alongside like, you know, Sting and, you know, baby Kyle MacLachlan. And it's a lot of bananas, and I really, really enjoyed it. And it's the kind of failure that only a great filmmaker can make. And I think if nothing else, you'll just be sort of entertained by it. And I mean, I understand now why they had to pass out a glossary when this was in theaters, because it throws a lot of exposition at you real quick. But, I think it's pretty followable. And while you're on HBO Max, if you are hungry for more Oscar Isaac, do check out the American remake of Scenes from a Marriage, which I've been getting into, and it's pretty great.
Ooh, I like that. I was trying to think of what I was gonna watch and what I was gonna suggest, and it came down to a simple idea, which was my take of the Oscar Isaac being Timothée Chalamet's dad. And I was like, oh, I guess he's just playing white, which reminds me of Ex Machina, when I totally read him as white. Like, but looking back, I'm like, okay, Iffy. It's my first perceived Oscar Isaac movie. I don't think that it was probably my first, but the first one where I was like, who is this man?
Lot of us thought that when we saw it.
Was Ex Machina before or after Llewyn Davis?
It was after, looking at it now. Okay. Because, yeah, I definitely did see Inside Llewyn Davis. But for that one, it was, who's the other cat in there who was like the main?
Justin Timberlake.
No, Jesus Christ, no.
Adam Driver?
Yeah. That, no, because Adam Driver was the homie, right? Who would just kept
He's
doing
the tall cowboy. Yeah.
He does that sound. Please, Mr. Kennedy. No, it was
like Garrett Hedlund.
Oh my God, it was him leading this. I did not perceive him as, once again, like,
he's
this was
Llewyn Davis.
Llewyn. That's who you're inside.
Yeah. Look, I'd be like to inside that Llewyn Davis. Yeah, I'll tell you. We talk about the spectrum, and the spectrum is Tom Hardy and Oscar Isaac for me. If only to tease all my lady friends. It's like, oh, you haven't fucked Oscar Isaac? I have.
You know what he likes?
Benevolent of you.
Oh my gosh. Oh, what a fun episode. Thank y'all all for being here with me today. This was so fun. Once again, I want to, you know, recommend, please pick up I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies. It's a nice, thanks, thick book. There's pictures in it too, if you're that person. If you're like, I don't want to read, there's pictures in it, quotes, recipes for eggnog. It's really I think, beyond, you should definitely read it, but if you love yourself a coffee table book, this is a good seasonal book to just have on the coffee table.
And you know, it's a fun gift for anybody, you know, who digs these movies. It's a fun gift for anybody who hates these movies, because, you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of fun goofing on them, but it's not mean.
If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm. Or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien, who's a Grinch. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson, who loves holidays. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.